Hi, I'm Maria Carson, and my favorite thing is the character Cheery Littlebottom from the Discworld books.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It is Sunday, February 21st. The interview that you're going to hear today was recorded a week ago, roughly, with Maria Carson. Maria is based in Pittsburgh with her husband, who she met at grad school. Maria and was one of the first friends that I made at my synagogue in Chicago, and I officiated her wedding, which we talk about a little bit. But when we did this interview, it was before the big freeze had hit Texas and other Gulf states. You know, that happens sometimes where in between recording and releasing an interview, there's been a national emergency. Honestly, it seems to happen more and more often, even though I've only started this podcast in May, and every week is a new type of emergency, national emergency around the country. We don't talk about what's happening in Texas because it hasn't happened yet. The people that I know in Texas, some have had, you know, have had pipes burst and been out of electricity, have lost their homes. A friend of mine, Danielle, who's in Dallas, shared information about the Genesis House, which is a women's shelter in Dallas, a domestic violence shelter, that they're what they call transitional housing, which is for women and children leaving abusive households, all got destroyed in the storm and in the freezing pipes and water damage. She shared that there was an Amazon wish list, and I tweeted that this weekend. It's at about 4,000 retweets now. They've gotten donations from 45 states, from international countries. Their story is one that made the national news. I had also donated to some mutual aid organizations just on Venmo, organizations that were trying to get people into hotels, get some food bought. So if you're able to do something to support people on the ground in Texas and the Gulf states, Louisiana and Mississippi, other states that are on the national power grid didn't make the news like Texas did, but it doesn't mean they don't need our support in the way that Texas has had our support. This week is Purim, so Hag Purim Sameach to those of you who are celebrating this week. Purim was really the first Jewish holiday for a lot of us in North America. It is the holiday that we remember as when everything changed. At my synagogue, we had a lot of synagogues had their kids' event, the carnival, and that was like the last normal thing any of us did in our Jewish communities. And by the time we got to our adult programming and our Megillah reading, we had closed our building to in-person events. I don't know. So I guess I've just been really feeling the crush of the anniversary, even though, like many people, March 13th is the day that I kind of hold as the day it all changed. But Purim is the holiday. So on the Hebrew calendar, this is a year. And I have certainly been feeling the crush of a year at home alone, and not seeing my friends, not seeing my family, not seeing the city or music or theater or all of the things that COVID has taken away from us. The people, first and foremost, and the experiences. But on the flip side, I hear every week of more friends who have gotten their vaccine. I am trying to wait patiently. I hope that you continue to stay home, stay safe, wear your masks, and wash your hands.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. And this is the podcast where we find out about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Today, I am very excited. Joining me live from Pittsburgh is one of my first friends I ever made at synagogue, Maria Carson. How are you doing today, Maria?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I've got a blanket on because it's negative 16 degrees today, and my quote unquote studio is in like the bay window of my apartment, which is not a warm place.
Yeah, I can relate to that. This has been my like winter of the sweater. I used to never wear sweaters, and now all I do is wear sweaters. Yeah. Something about COVID, I just can like throw on a sweater, sometimes just with pajama pants underneath it, and I look like moderately Zoom professional. So that's all I do.
I do a lot of, I recently cut the elastic bands off the bottom of a pair of sweatpants because I was like, I want these sweatpants to be even more comfortable.
Yep.
Which means like, and I'm like, who am I that I'm like making at home adjustments to my sweats and also like sweaters, cardigans, cozy.
Yep.
I'm drinking a lot more tea. I'm drinking coffee much later into the day.
Yep. It's a wild time. And now I started crocheting. So now I'm crocheting blankets so I can just have like a stack of blankets on me by the time I'm done. That's so perfect. Yeah, it's going to be great.
What type of, are you new to crocheting?
I was a knitter for a while. So I am new to crocheting, but not to toot my own horn, I think I am maybe picking it up a little bit quicker than maybe someone who did not come to it from the knitting angle first.
Okay.
I don't know too many fancy stitches, but I know several basic stitches. Nice. So,
are you following a pattern on your blanket?
No, I usually am not. One blanket I did what's called an extended crumpled stitch or something, which was beautiful. And this one, I'm just making a circle. So no pattern. It's actually an oval. I made a line and then I made a kidney shape. And then that's expanding and expanding to be just a big circle.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I'll show you. Nobody listening can see. I just got a new pair of Fiskars.
Oh, those look beautiful.
Can you hear how nice they sound?
Some ASMR.
Yeah. Have been trying to rearrange my clothing situation. And finally I was like, sentimental t-shirts. I got to do something.
Yeah.
And I am not going to do the quilting myself, but I will cut the t-shirts and send in the panels to a quilting company and just have like a Hamilton podcast political blanket made for me.
Beautiful. It'll be great.
Because what I'm covered in now is my t-shirt quilt that I made after I graduated from college in 1999.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And t-shirt quilts are they're really like the perfect weight.
Yeah, that makes sense. So
that's my crafting goal. What's it like getting to know a new city during a pandemic? Or do you just get to know your apartment?
Well, we do know our apartment pretty well, I would say. I have a lot of family in Pittsburgh.
You do?
I do. My father grew up in Pittsburgh.
Amazing.
So yeah. So, and I know Leah because I converted to Judaism and Leah had converted to Judaism with the same rabbi. And so we became friends. So I am also very involved in the Jewish community here, but I don't have a Jewish family here, which is kind of funny because I feel like I've made some inroads into the Jewish community. And then I have like this Catholic side family and they don't always know each other, but they sometimes know each other. And my uncle was having fun when I moved in, calling his Jewish friends, being like, my Jewish goddaughter is moving to Pittsburgh. So yeah, so that's been kind of fun. But he's a very sociable guy. And every once in a while he calls me, and he called me this morning actually to apologize for not having me over as much because some of his kids just had babies and one had some health problems. And so they just can't have a lot of people around. And I'm always like, oh, it's okay. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? So yeah, but it's been nice. I did a lot of hiking in the fall.
Oh, so nice. Because Pittsburgh is, I've been to Pittsburgh once. It was after our friend Jonathan broke his hip skiing near Pittsburgh.
I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
And I drove into Pittsburgh from that Altoona, Pennsylvania, driving a rented Toyota Yaris in a blizzard. So if I remember anything about Pittsburgh, it's that there's a ton of hills.
Yes.
Which I can imagine makes for good hiking.
Yes, it is really amazing hiking. And we live in Squirrel Hill, which is an adorable name. It's a very Jewish neighborhood of Pittsburgh, and there's lots of beautiful parks. So we live like in between two really, really beautiful parks. One of the parks has goats in them that like the goats like mow, quote unquote, mow the grass by eating it. So I would go and stare at the goats.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it was pretty cute. So that was nice. But I'm one of those people, I really like the winter, but I'm also like petrified of falling over ever since I was a kid, like slipping on the ice.
Yeah.
I never could do roller skating or I could never do ice skating. And we live on a hill. So it's hard for me to like go out when it might be icy because I'm like, oh no, I don't want to slip and then like slide down the hill.
Right. Cause you got to get back up the hill.
And you have to get back up the hill. Yes. Although walking up hills scares me a lot less than walking down hills. I have a very cartoonish idea of what it would be like. Like I imagine myself falling on my butt and then sliding down the whole hill as if that's something that actually could happen. But so that's, but you know, it's all right. So our big news here is we bought a Roomba. So
you name it?
Robbie McHumanson. So a robot that thinks it's a human. So, and we treat it like a pet. We coo at it when it zooms by, you know, we try to give it affirmations if it's having trouble getting onto the carpet.
Nice. I don't have one. I don't know how the cats would do with a third roommate like that.
I know. I mean, it is hard to know. I mean, I told my mom that, you know, I've had the Roomba for 2 days and I can't even imagine my life without it. Like, I love it so much. I'm never going back. I'm like starting to worry about what happens when it breaks. Like I have a Roomba emergency fund now in case the Roomba breaks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What do you like about it? Because you guys don't have pets, right?
Yeah. So what do I like about it? That's a great question. I don't know if it's just me, but I make a huge mess when I cook, and we cook now all the time. And I get crumbs all over the kitchen floor. And I also have a real hard time like sweeping because I mean, I sweep, but I feel like whenever you try to get the dust into the dust, what are those things called? The dust pail, the dust pan.
The dust pan,
yeah. Yeah, there's always like a little line of dust that you can never get in. And it just like really bothers me. And then I end up like kicking it under the fridge or something. So I'm not good at sweeping. And also, we have like a red rug in our living room that like shows any lint shows and it looks really bad. But mostly it's nice because it forces us to keep stuff off the floor. So if we want to run the Roomba, we have to keep stuff off the floor.
Yeah.
So we're better at putting stuff away and then we run the Roomba and everything looks really nice. And yeah.
That's awesome. Because I only hear good things about it, especially when you have pets to like chase the cat hair.
I've heard that it really helps with pets. Yeah, we don't have pets. We're just kind of lazy. And
you're allowed to have a Roomba without pets. I have only heard the people I hear who love it also tend to have pets. So it's good to know it works both ways.
Yeah, right.
The thing that Instagram wants me to buy now is like, it's a dust bin. It's like a garbage can with a vacuum inside of it, and it's got an arc on, it's got like an opening on the bottom, and so you sweep your pile of dust to it and then you turn it on and it sucks it up,
so it doesn't have the problem I was just talking about with the line.
It's another way to solve it.
Interesting. So now that seems helpful,
but it doesn't keep you company like or give you a show like a Roomba does.
That's true. And it like the Roomba like maps out your home very quickly, and then you can like tell it to do just one room. So it's nice.
So you're in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Getting to know it. And have you been, I know we're going to talk about one of your favorite characters.
Yep.
In a minute, but have you been, is there anything new you've been reading or watching lately? Like any good COVID binges? Or appetizers.
Binges or appetizers. I did play and I really, really liked the video game Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Would recommend. 10 out of 10. So that, and I was like very obsessed with it for a while. So I would like play it and then I restarted it and then I kind of lost interest. So I haven't gone through it twice yet, but it's very excellent. Me and my husband started watching What We Do in the Shadows. Have you heard of that?
So I've watched been great. The first season, I think. Yeah.
And the second season is on Hulu. Yeah. And we also, you know, we're, you know, nerds. So we started getting into Critical Role and some other D&D podcasts. One I really like is called Not Another D&D Podcast.
Yeah.
Definitely recommend. Very, very funny.
All right. So, Maria, what are we here to talk about today?
We are here to talk about one of my favorite characters ever. Her name is Cheery Littlebottom, and she's in the Discworld Terry Pratchett universe.
All right. Terry Pratchett is an author.
Yes, he is an author. And so he is a very prolific author. He wrote Good Omens with Neil Gaiman. And so a lot of people know him through that. But so he has a lot of books, but many, many of his books fall into the Discworld universe.
Okay.
And like any sort of cinematic universe, there's different sort of parts of the world that you can get into. And sometimes they overlap and sometimes they don't. I haven't read all of the Discworld books. I've read a good chunk of them. If you're looking for a place to start, most people recommend starting with a book called Guards, Guards, which is the first of the Night Watch or the City Guard, depending on how you're labeling them, that kind of genre. So it's about essentially police officers in a city that's similar to London. And that's the world in which Cheery Littlebottom exists.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That is helpful because his is definitely a name I recognize.
Yes. He's very funny. And it's like mostly fantasy stuff that he writes. So. Okay.
And is that the book that you recommend starting with? Or yes. Is that the book? Okay.
I recommend starting with Guards, Guards. If you start Guards, Guards and you can't get into it, maybe try Going Postal, which is also very funny. And they're slightly different. So okay. The first one he wrote in the world is called The Color of Magic, which I have never read. And that's more about the wizards and the wizard school in the world. So there's the Night Watch or the City Guard books that are sometimes called the Industrial Revolution, which has to do with things like the development of the post office, the development of the bank, which sounds really boring, but they're very funny. Uh-huh. And witches books, which are about people who live in the countryside and there's like witches. And those are good too. So if you want a more witchy book, you could start with, what's it called? We Three Sisters? No, that's not it. But yeah, Guards, Guards is great. Very, very funny.
There's an author I like who is not prolific like Terry Pratchett, and that's Jasper Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Who he's got a series called the Thursday Next series, which is a slightly parallel, a parallel universe.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in London, but the main character Thursday Next is a book cop. So she is a human being who polices book world and the crimes that happen between characters when books are closed.
Oh, interesting.
Because characters only need to be doing, like Alice in Wonderland, only mm-hmm. needs to be doing what it says on the page when somebody is actively reading the book. So when all copies of the book are closed, she can go get into trouble.
Yep.
And the first book in that series is called The Air Affair, and it's about the original manuscript of Jane Eyre gets stolen, and the person starts making changes to the original manuscript
mm-hmm.
and how that impacts the lives of the characters.
That's awesome.
And so she goes in and out of book world solving book crimes.
That sounds really cool. I did remember what that book was called. So Weird Sisters is
I've definitely heard of Weird Sisters.
Yes. So that's the first of the witches sort of arc often. And that's also very good. So okay. Weird Sisters, Going Postal, or Guards, Guards.
Okay.
So yeah.
And where did, let's time travel.
Yep.
Where and when did you start with this series?
Probably about maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I actually tried reading Guards a couple times before I could really get through it, to be honest. But I did really enjoy it when I was reading it. And I really, probably actually, it was when Cherry Littlebottom came onto the scene that I just fell in love with the books. And she comes on the scene for this book called Feet of Clay, which is the third book in the Watch sort of sub-series. And I just really loved her character. And I really felt like I resonated a lot with her. And I really just sort of started to fall in love with the world shortly after falling in love with her. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So is this when you were at JTS?
No, well, maybe. So I went to the Jewish Theological Seminary to get my master's in Jewish philosophy. I probably did read some of them before that. So maybe when I was at DePaul, so when you and I first knew each other. But it wasn't like a huge part of my life. It became more important to me as I continued reading these books and just loving them so much. And, you know, I started getting into like fan fiction about them and stuff like that. So, but yeah, they've been around in my life for a long time. So, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I have, I just have lost all sense of time.
So. I know.
I can't tell if your wedding was like 10 years ago or 2 years ago in my brain.
It was like 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
So yes, but I get confused as well. So Leah officiated our wedding. It was beautiful.
It was such a great wedding.
It was really fun.
The venue, that like forest.
Yep.
It was it's such a stunning location for a wedding.
Yeah, it really was beautiful. Yeah. But I always forget. I have to like... Dan, my husband, tends to remember like what year we got married. I always have to like either look at our ketubah or like try to just count backwards, but everything blends together.
Okay. So you started reading it when you were still in Chicago.
Yep.
I was trying to draw some sort of parallel from the building you lived in New York, which like felt like you were living in like the fantasy world.
Yes, it was. And I can go down this whole thing because as the series progresses, Cherry Littlebottom is a dwarf. Dwarf culture becomes more and more Jewish as the books go on until like, I think Terry Pratchett must have wanted to make them Jews later on, like an allegory for Jewish people. At the beginning of the series, they actually are not. So it changes, it kind of morphs in intensities as the season goes on. But yes, so series, not season. But yes, I lived in this really weird building for a couple years.
It had real strong, only because I don't have another castle boarding school to relay it to.
Yeah.
It had very strong Hogwarts vibes.
It really did. And so I lived in the building, the Jewish Theological Seminary. So I like lived in this building where like there were classrooms like a floor below. Like I would sometimes be riding the elevator with my dirty laundry with like professors and stuff. It was a strange experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So tell me a little bit about, I mean, we're going to talk a lot about Cherry.
Yeah, of course.
But what's her brief bio? She's a dwarf.
Yes. She is a dwarf. She trained as an alchemist. And she blew up the Alchemist Guild. So she got fired from being an alchemist and then joined the City Watch, so the police officers, as a forensic sort of specialist. So, but she's most well known because in dwarf culture, they did not make a public distinction between the sexes, between genders. And she was the first, quote unquote, openly female dwarf. So she was the first one to use she as a pronoun. She wore a skirt. And this was like very shocking. So.
Wow.
Yes.
So when you say blew up the Alchemist Guild.
Yes.
Was it an explosion or a political blow up?
Oh, it was an explosion.
Okay.
But it's only referred to like as something that happened in the past. So you never like see it happen. She comes into her interview. And they're like, why do you want to be a police officer? And she's like, well, I can't be an alchemist anymore because there was a mistake with the chemicals I was using. So, yes.
Wow. And does she, so she becomes a police officer and in forensics?
Yes. Yeah. Forensics or, you know, the forensics equivalent in, you know, vaguely the medieval past. You know how like fantasy books are always vaguely set in medieval times?
Yeah.
So with the Discworld books, it's like sometimes they have some things that are like maybe a little bit later in history than medieval times. Sometimes it seems more medieval, but it's all vaguely the past.
And it's fantasy, which my, right, like my frame of reference for fantasy is honestly listening to Nicole Byer and Lauren Lapkus experience Lord of the Rings, which,
yep.
So is this a world where it's dwarves and elves and like those like types of beings?
Yes. So it's fantasy, but like fantasy kind of refracted through like what it would be like in also a bureaucratic society. So for example, there's trolls and dwarves, but there's the, instead of the Anti-Defamation League, they have the anti, what do they call it? Like the Anti-Defamation Against Silicon League. So it's like that organization that's like for troll rights. And then they have similar kind of organizations that are trying to like make sure that people don't discriminate against dwarves in the city and stuff. So it's all very political and kind of like humdrum sort of things. So uh-huh. They deal with things like, some of the books I said are based on sort of Industrial Revolution things. So like there's a whole book about the development of postage stamps, but in this like fantasy world. So okay. Like there's wizards and stuff, but there's also lots of discussion about postage stamps and about paper currency and stuff like that. So it's all, it's fantasy, but more realistic somehow.
Yeah. It handles the questions where that when you're reading a fantasy book and you're just like, but how do they, you know, how did you get to the point where it's this many gold ducats yeah. for blah, blah, blah? Or that's interesting because it's also the best information we have about Roman times or ancient Jerusalem is like the bookkeeping and the bureaucracy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. So yeah, it's a lot kind of based on that sort of thing. One of the books, the first book that Ciri comes up in called Feet of Clay, it's all about golems and how golems, which are from Jewish mythology, they're these sort of clay people. And in the Discworld universe, they're these clay people that have been animated to do a specific job. And they will sometimes rebel against their masters by doing a specific job too much. So like if you tell a golem, okay, sweep the floor, there have been instances where golems have just swept the floor so much that the floor has been totally like eroded. And then the whole book is really also about whether or not golems should have the same kind of rights as people, whether or not they're people or machines. So it's like kind of all about these sort of quandaries. Terry Pratchett has a famous quote. I'm not going to say it perfectly, but it's about how like sometimes in fantasy worlds people will have little pet dragons on their shoulders like as a little accessory, and the quote is something like, that seems really nice, but when you realize it, you know, your hair gets singed and there's like, you know, dragon crap down your back. So he tries to like think about what these things would really be like.
That's interesting, because on golems, like I read the Genie and the Golem, mispronouncing, they spell genie, I think it's not actually like genie. Yeah, the golem and the djinn, is that yeah. what it's called?
Maybe.
It's almost like that image of a golem combined with Amelia Bedelia.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Yeah. She literally did what she was asked, and it was always the wrong thing. The wrong thing.
Yeah.
So she comes up for the first time in a book with a strong golem storyline.
Yep.
And she wasn't a Jewish character yet?
Well, so she may have been. So Terry Pratchett first talks about dwarves in, well, I'm actually not, the first exposure I had to Terry Pratchett talking about dwarves was in Guards, Guards, because one of the main characters in the whole series and the main character of the Watch books is called Carrot Iron Founderson. And he was a little baby who was found by dwarves and raised by dwarves. And then when he got old enough, when he, you know, entered puberty, got a little like older than puberty, they realized they needed to send him to humans because he started to have like little crushes on dwarvish females and everyone was getting upset. And so they sent him off to be a city watchman. And he is the main character for a lot of these books. And his relationship with his dwarf family is pretty much just like, oh, they're these miners. They don't really distinguish between the genders. And it all seems very like parochial and kind of like the thing with the genders is pretty much just made almost for laughs, mm-hmm. I think. Like, he's kind of just making fun of the fact that in a lot of fantasy books, dwarves are all seen as bearded, kind of burly looking men. So I think he's just making a joke about that. And Terry Pratchett does this a lot. He'll like make a joke about something and then you can tell he'll be thinking about it and be like, well, actually, how would this work? And starts kind of like unraveling this. So then he has this character of Ciri, who is a female dwarf and decides to become openly female. And that sort of starts this relationship between dwarvish law and dwarvish culture in a way that becomes kind of Jewish. But I don't think the Jewish allegory really starts up until maybe the fifth elephant or the book Thud. And it's really obvious in the book Thud. But yeah, it is weird that this golem stuff was at the same time. So maybe he had always intended the dwarves to be like an allegory for Jews. I don't know.
Is Terry Pratchett Jewish?
I don't think so.
Okay.
He's British. He's deceased. He had Alzheimer's. Some of the dwarfs, I think like on the book and tape, books on tape, a lot of the dwarfs sound like, have like Welsh accents, and mm-hmm. a lot of the locations they come from are either Eastern Europe or like Wales.
Yeah.
So there is this like group of dwarfs who like come from Eastern Europe. Again, there's this like allegory there that makes sense for Eastern European Jews. But yeah, by Thud, definitely. It's like super obvious, I think.
So tell me a little bit more about Ciri Littlebottom's life and her adventures.
So her adventures are pretty much just solving crimes with the watch and her becoming more and more accepted as an openly female dwarf. So she's first introduced as a he, and then another character finds out she's a woman and she really wants to come out publicly. And at the time it was written, that was probably more of an allegory, maybe about being gay and the way they talk about it, because they talk about her coming out or feeling like she can do what she wants or wear what she wants, and less is like less of a gender identity, maybe. Yeah. It's all a little muddled now because the books were written in a different time. But I think most fans are still think it seems there's maybe somehow progressive undertones to it.
Sure.
Yeah. So she goes back to her hometown in one of the books and people like are really shocked by her because she's, you know, wearing skirts and using the pronoun she, and they call her bad words. And more of these dwarves in the city, which is called Ankh-Morpork, but it's sort of like London, are starting to also use she, her pronouns. And they're sort of saying they prefer sherry, the drink, instead of beer, and that kind of stuff. That's sort of seen as a feminine thing. So, yeah. And then in Thud, which is my favorite book probably in the Terry Pratchett universe, you really start to learn more about dwarf culture, and she sort of helps solve a crime there along with some of the other main characters. And there's this liberal grag, which is their word for like rule keeper, and it's like they describe it, this is where the similarity between rabbis and grags or like dwarf culture and Jews becomes super, super obvious, because they describe themselves constantly, dwarf culture, as not religious, because they say they don't believe in God, but they have this figure called a grag. Uh-huh. And then one of the humans asks, well, what does this person do? And there's this vague, oh, well, they know all the rules and things, and they're very important because they keep contracts between people, and also they can like officiate marriages, but we're not really religious, but yet we have this figure.
Right. Which is we like, have a culture of a knowledgeable person who.
Right. So that's like very similar to how a lot of Jews will think about rabbis and how that the rabbi figure functioned in Jewish society for a long time. And so he's like a liberal grag, and he like doesn't think the rules have to be so extreme, and is like supportive of people who want to be openly female and stuff like that. So, and he's like an allegory for more, you might say, reform rabbis or something like that. So yeah. But she's pretty much kind of a minor character, I would say, like a main supporting character. So she has these little side stories about like further acceptance and dealing with one's culture and trying to be like a reformer of the culture, but still really caring about your culture.
Right.
Because at one point someone suggests to her, well, why don't you shave your beard if you want to act more like a woman? And she like gets really like shocked and upset. And she's like, no, I'm still a dwarf. Like, I can't shave my beard. Like, right. I'm still a dwarf.
The beard is engendered. Like, the beard is dwarf culture, not gender culture.
Right. So she wants to like wear a leather skirt instead of leather pants. She doesn't want to like become totally like a human.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't want to like give away spoilers. And some of this is a little spoilery because, like I said, when Cherry is first introduced, it's with he, his pronouns. And then you only find out that Cherry's a girl or a woman like later on, but it's pretty early in the book. So it doesn't really feel like a spoiler.
It may be a little bit of a spoiler, but it's a pretty compelling reason to dive into the story.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, so her best friend in the watch is, this is again, not really a spoiler because you find out pretty early in the book, is a werewolf. And so she also has to deal with like discrimination, and she doesn't tell that many people that she's a werewolf. And she's the one who first finds out that Cherry's a girl because she says she can like smell the difference between dwarf men and women. And they talk and, you know, they bond over shared discrimination and that sort of thing. So yeah, and in the book, The Fifth Elephant, when a bunch of people go to Uberwald, which is their version of like the East, which is like ruled by different clans of people, you also learn a lot about vampire culture and werewolf culture and dwarf culture, because those are like the three main people who kind of run Eastern Europe in the Discworld universe. And it's just really fascinating.
So she's a minor character, she's like a major supporting character.
Yep.
Is she more well developed in like fan fiction?
I don't really know. There's not a huge amount of fan fiction, I would say, for Discworld. There's a fair amount. And I think there is some that try to develop her more. I would say she's pretty well developed. Terry Pratchett does a really good job of, I don't know how he does it or how he did it, but he had a good job of giving characters cameos in other books. So uh-huh. they feel more well-rounded. For example, the book about the development of the newspaper industry, which is called The Truth, there's another murder in, and the main character in that story is a reporter. And he like observes Cherry Littlebottom, like, collecting clues at a crime scene. And I don't think you even find out her name because it's from his vantage point, but he interacts with her and she's like completely in character. And it's just this short little scene, but you feel like you know her more and you know that she's running around doing these things even when the spotlight isn't on her.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting that he's able to do that. So people have little cameos in different book series all the time.
Yeah.
He's just able to convey a lot of character development for her, especially I think in the books that she does make a pretty big appearance in, like in The Fifth Elephant, when they go for the first time back to the East, Uberwald, you find out she just is a very sympathetic character, and you find out a lot about her just from very pretty small exchanges with some of the more major characters.
Huh.
So yeah, so that's enough for me. And I definitely, you know, like to have headcanons, which is a term when you try to like fill in the gaps of a book yourself.
Right.
Or, you know, little fan fiction, that kind of stuff. But there is a fair amount of fan art drawn of her, I think, as with all the Watch people. So people like doing that as well. Yeah, but it is weird that I feel so attached to her. And I don't know why I feel so connected to her. I mean, I'm bisexual, but I've come out, I guess, but I haven't, it hasn't been so dramatic in my life the same way her coming out story was, because she was like the first one in her community to do this thing and people like really shunned her. And I like sort of waited until I was married to a man to like come out as bisexual. So it was like, like I was kind of like collecting as much straight passing privilege as I could before.
You don't think a character who progressively over a number of books becomes more and more Jewish is a character you would connect to?
That's true, because yes, because I also converted to Judaism, and yes, and that is true that the, yeah. So I guess
And then that's you got a master's in Jewish theology, and then you went and you're working on a PhD in
Judaic studies.
Yes.
That's true. And so, yes, as it became more and more apparent that the dwarves were, you know, somehow a stand-in for Jewish culture in a lot of ways, I think that was a big part of it too. So, but yeah, like I said, that doesn't happen immediately with her, really, yeah. in an interesting way. And I don't really know, I guess that maybe it was just became something that Terry Pratchett became interested in maybe later in life, sure. and or something like that. But
well, yeah. And it also sounds like he didn't, because I just have such a limited way to talk about fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But like J.K. Rowling embraced the worst stereotypes of Jews when she made the banker trolls.
Yep, yep.
Like that was her Jewish stand-in, right?
Yep.
Which are the worst stereotypes of Jews. And so now it sounds like Terry Pratchett, in creating a Jewish allegory, didn't go with the worst stereotypes and anti-Semitic tropes about Jews. He went a little bit deeper more nuanced about Jewish culture and tradition.
I think that's probably true. So, and again, at the beginning, the dwarves are like mostly just sort of stereotypes about dwarves that you see in like, so like at the beginning of the series, they're seen as like crazy. They drink a lot and they mine a lot and they drink a lot of beer and they quaff beer. He always makes jokes about them quaffing. And I don't think that sort of like idea of Jews being a beer drinking people or having a lot of alcoholism in their culture is like, that's not really a thing the same way you might say that about other communities. So that still remains. But then as this sort of allegory between dwarves become more Jewish, there's this idea that they are quite fascinated by contracts, that they have a rule-based system, that they have dwarves that are much more religious or observant, who wear dark clothes all the time and try to be more insular. And then there's dwarves who are more integrated into the society, into the broader non-dwarvish society. So yeah, I guess that maybe is a good way of thinking about it. I mean, there is still this idea that dwarves really like gold and really are like very interested in money and mercantile stuff. But yeah. I mean, there's even this idea, I don't know if Terry Pratchett found out about what a geniza is. A geniza is a storehouse where religious Jews would, anything that had the name of God written on it, they would save it in this special storehouse because you were not supposed to dispose of it. And they have been really important for archivists and researchers because the Cairo Geniza was this like huge storehouse of just all these documents that people were saving, and they found it and were able to, you know, learn a lot about Jews of the past and also non-Jews of the past that would interact with Jews sometimes. But so there's this idea that comes out mostly in the book Thud that dwarves think all words are sacred. And so that they save all of their, they don't like any sort of disposable lettering. And so that's like an idea. And then there's this whole exchange about like, well, dwarves started the first printing press and were the first like newspaper creators. Mm. And then there's like, yeah, but like not all dwarves take the law as seriously as others. So this idea of this sort of like plasticity of Jewish law, which, you know, Jews ever since modernity and probably even before that have been dealing with, how to engage with the law, how to engage with Jewish law in a broader non-Jewish context.
So are these a series that you reread, or is it?
Yes, definitely. So I reread them, and for a while I was living apart from my husband. And so I would travel during the weekends to see him, and I would listen to them on tape. So I've probably listened or read The Fifth Elephant probably like 8 times. Thud probably like 15 times, and Feet of Clay probably like 5 times. So a lot. Yeah.
Wow.
Guards maybe only like 3 or 4 times. But yeah, I do reread them a lot.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Have you read it? I mean, it's an expansive, I have the website open and I'll link to it, but it's,
I haven't read them all.
Yeah, it's a lot of books.
It's a lot. And there's different like trees. There's like people who make like maps, like this is how you start and read these books if you want to follow these characters and that kind of stuff. So, but yes, I haven't read all of them. I haven't read all of, there's like a book series that's an offshoot of the Witch's books. They're called the Tiffany Aching or Aching books. I think it's Aching. That's more geared towards children. I haven't read any of those. And I haven't read a lot of the wizard books.
Yeah.
I've read some of them, but not all of them. Huh. I think his first books are a little, I just don't think they're quite as good. And I think some of his later books are also not quite as good. Unfortunately, he had some mental decline because of his Alzheimer's. So I think the middle point are really his good books. So
I did a quick Google and I was like, wait, is this, did I just find a question of you that you asked on Reddit? And it's not you, but it's like the subject line is Pratchett and Judaism.
And that might be me. I don't think it's me, but I might've responded. I probably did.
It's like, it's someone that says I'm converting, I'm reading Heschel, and I'm struck between the similarities of small gods and like
what okay. I know. That's not me because I actually haven't read all of Small Gods.
Yeah.
But I might have responded, but don't say what my handle is.
Because I won't. I was just, but when I checked the year because I was like, Heschel and converting.
I know, because I'm writing my dissertation on Heschel.
Because I was like, are other people talking about it? And absolutely. Like there are lots of Reddit threads that come up and questions and people talking about it.
Yeah. So I'm not like a genius for seeing the similarities between dwarves and Judaism. It's quite obvious and people are aware of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether or not Terry Pratchett became interested in Judaism. I could probably tweet his daughter. She's pretty, and maybe she's already talked about this. She's pretty active on Twitter. And one thing we maybe should address is the horrible new, I'm like very, very anti the new BBC adaptation of the Night Watch series called The Watch, which is a TV show.
Oh.
And Discworld, most Discworld fans hate the TV show and refuse to watch it because it's very different from the books. And I think it's not getting good reviews even from people who are not attached to the books.
So did that just start this year?
I think so. It like when it first came out, I was really excited because it was sort of billed as something that would be very faithful to the source material, but be like a police procedural. And I think there could be a lot of funny little new stories that, you know, the City Watch has to go investigate. But instead they tried to make it this like gritty, like a different time period. And there's another character who I'm attached to who is, her name is Sybil. She's older, she has a kid later. So she's maybe like in her early 40s, maybe late 30s, maybe even mid 40s. And she's described as fat, and she's fat and awesome and a dragon breeder. And she like gets married to like the main character and he's like totally obsessed with her. And it's one of the few times I've seen a fat woman be written about so sympathetically, where she doesn't lose a lot of weight. She's described as beautiful and she's just has a great life, even though she's fat.
Yeah.
And they made her thin. How dare they? They made her thin and they also made her an assassin for some reason in the show.
Not necessary.
And Cheery doesn't have a beard for some reason. So it's wild. She's also black in the show, which is fine. I think actually there's nothing in the books to say she couldn't be black.
Right.
But making her thin is the real problem. So.
And there are, it turns out, there are black fat actresses, even in the UK, who could have taken the role.
And would have done an amazing job with it.
Yeah. Terry's daughter, Rihanna, said it shares no DNA with my father's watch.
Yeah.
And Neil Gaiman compared the series to Batman if he's now a news reporter in a yellow trench coat with a pet bat.
Yeah, people... people are pissed. Yeah, so, yeah, as soon as the first, like... shots of the actors came out, I was like, this is not going to be good. And
and it only came out like 6 weeks ago, so
so I was like, oh, I should address it at some point. And like, I'm hoping, I mean, hopefully none of people are tuning in because maybe they love the show and I'm just like saying it's terrible. I've never actually seen it, so So maybe it's good, but it's just nothing like the books. So
if you went in expecting, you're like, they pulled some words and some character names and that's all.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because it does seem, you know, people are already, there is already conversation about like making a new Lord of the Rings film. Even though.
Yeah.
Because it's been 20 years.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, and, I feel old. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's, and you feel like, well, it has any new fantasy world been developed? Discworld sounds amazing and rich and like quite the franchise if like Disney put their like Marvel claws into it. Not that you want Disney to do it, but like, you could have TV shows and movies and animated and...
I am a little skeptical of how well it would translate. I know that maybe makes me a bad Discworld fan, but it is... There have been some animated series, but it is... Like, a lot of his humor comes from the use of footnotes in the book. So things like that, it's very much like a book. It's... And I sometimes wonder if it would actually seem... kind of boring as a movie because in a certain way it is a little bit slower. It's like this very dry humor. Sometimes you can see the jokes before they happen. And I'm not sure if it would be that compelling as a television show.
Yeah.
But maybe it would, or a movie or whatnot. But it is a rich world, definitely. And it has a lot of interesting world building.
Yeah. And intense world building of like all the different areas of life.
Yes. Yeah. And different continents with different, like, you know, stuff going on in the different continents and different people who, you know, don't even run into each other, but you still know they're living near each other. So it's very kind of fascinating. He really put a lot of thought into the world building, I think.
Yeah. So have you collected any fan art pieces or?
I have not. Yeah, I haven't. I feel like a lot of the fan art pieces, especially of Ciri, are a little like unsettling to look at because they look so unusual because she is this like dwarfish, high femmy person.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been something I felt really comfortable like putting up in my room, say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have read a lot of fan fiction. There's not a lot about Ciri. I've written some, which I like. A lot of the fan fiction is about... A lot of fan fiction likes gay male pairings. And a lot is male pairings. So like the head of the city and the head of the city watch together. And I don't really like that pairing much. So I tend not to read that. I don't know why that is. I think... It might have started from Star Trek pairing Spock and Kirk, but it just has continued. So yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think probably for so long it was just not content, pop culture available. Right.
That's true. So people needed to create their own content. Yeah. So I don't have a lot of like ephemera. I really just have the books. And I made the shocking decision, because I'm also a big fan of Marie Kondo, to get rid of all of my physical Discworld books. So I don't have any. I just have ebooks. Shocking. Wow. I really have. I don't have many books now. I have mostly ebooks. It's very shocking. But you know, we move a lot, and books are really heavy. And
you're both academics. So yeah, it comes. You guys met at grad school. So
yeah,
you met in a way that came with a lot of books.
Yep. And I really try to not keep many at all. So so sometimes I wonder if I will regret that, but I really love my Kindle. And so I read them on the Kindle now.
Who does the, are there multiple narrations of the books, or do you have a favorite audiobook narrator that you go to?
Yes, there's two people. And it's like the earlier books are done by one guy, and the later books, and they're both famous guys, but I forget their names. You would probably recognize them. Nigel Planer is the first one.
Do you not know him?
Yeah, he is not as famous. And then the other one who does Thud audiobook, Stephen Briggs. He's like a famous guy, isn't he?
Is he?
Stephen, I thought so.
Briggs audio.
Oh, no, he's not. He sounds like this famous guy. I thought he was somebody else. Okay, so I apologize. You won't recognize them, but Stephen Briggs and Nigel Planer, they're both excellent. They're available on like Audible, I guess. But yeah, the way I got them is your public library might have the CD ROMs. So that's what I did. And then I played them in the car. So,
well, there is, I have the Libby app.
Yes. Libby might have them too.
The audiobook checkout. All right. So is there anything that I haven't asked you about Discworld or
Cherry Littlebottom
that if we hang up and this goes out as your definitive interview, that you'd be like, I can't believe I didn't tell Leah
this. You know, thing. I think part of the reason I'm also attached to her is that she's shy and she feels awkward a lot and she's scared a lot, but she always overcomes her fears and she's not considered hugely attractive even by dwarf or human standards. So she's very like approachable. And I really felt like that resonated a lot with me, but she's not like the brunt of a joke. Sometimes she might be, but like, she's still sympathetic and she's still someone you really root for. And you get the sense that Terry Pratchett really cared for her in his own authorly way. And that's just so amazing. And I feel like there's not a lot of characters like that, like flawed women who are still allowed to be awesome people, that you don't see them that often. And Discworld has a lot of them. So I highly recommend it, particularly if you're looking for some flawed women who might remind you a lot of yourself, but still be in a very sympathetic way. So
that's a great pitch.
Yeah. So he really has been good about that. He probably was such a great guy. When I realized he had passed away, he died either before I was way into Discworld or somehow I didn't realize he had passed. Yeah. So when I realized he had passed, I like cried a lot. I was like, oh no. But it was kind of happy that he passed in a way, because he was a big advocate for assisted suicide. And he, I think, wanted that for himself. And I'm not sure he was able to get that, but he did eventually pass.
Yeah. So. It looks like it was he suffered from Alzheimer's. So
Yep. And it was, it had gone on for a while.
Great. Well, Maria, this has been wonderful.
Great. Well, I hope I get some people to not watch the show and to read the books. So that would be excellent.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.